listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee here in the liberal land of long beards, lattes, and lutefisk. Since I'm the all-powerful announcer guy and have the power to do this, I'd like to share my thought of the day as we get into today's show. I got nothing. And now here are your hosts, Doug Padgett, Brett Johnson, and Hunter Hawes.
Hey, all. Good afternoon. Doug Padgett here. In with Brett today. So it's a Tuesday, which is often just a Brett day, but now today's a Doug and Brett day. And so we're keeping you all on your toes. Brett, thanks for swapping days out with me yesterday. You know, the highlight of the repartee is all the voices, all the partners, all the commentary, and sometimes it's hard for people to keep track of. So,
oh, I was proud of the other day. Pete Buttigieg used the word repartee in one of his videos. So we're catching on.
Kidding me? He did?
Yeah.
Let's splice that thing together into some way that Pete Buttigieg says, hey, you know, listen to the repartee. And hey, you know what? I think we're going to have some good access to him. I've got some people really working on that. So I'm looking forward to an insider interview with him. And I'm thinking a lot of him. And also Andrew Yang. I don't know if we're going to play an Andrew Yang bumper, but Andrew Yang, our earliest bumper voice as a presidential candidate, with his bit here when he was on with Hunter, is really rising. Are you keeping an eye on Andrew Yang's climb in the more popular polls and fundraising tallies? He's really doing the job.
I think he's actually now at this point qualified for the debates coming up this summer. Yeah, he's definitely been rising in the polls. He has kind of an interesting background too, not only because he's not a traditional politician, but he's getting some strange support from a lot of these people who are Trump fans on kind of the alt-right internet. But, of course, he's got some good policies, too. But he's got an interesting dynamic base of support, kind of, as the – I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw he was on an interview on one of the shows on Sunday, maybe on Meet the Press. And he was asked about that. They played the audio of a podcast or radio show with the alt-right nutter jobs, saying, you know, this Andrew Yang, he's the guy that we should be behind. And he turned his, you know, he just sort of said, look, I'm not interested in their support, and, you know, didn't try to explain it or didn't try to overly disavow it. He just said, I'm not at all interested. Do you have any idea, Brett, what it is about his policies as he's talked about them so far that's attractive to that crowd of white supremacists and right-wing alt-right guys?
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of these alt-right people, and I think they're a big reason of how they got Trump elected, not just your MAGA hat-wearing people, but it's the guys on this kind of dark internet that share memes. They're the one who spread those false memes along, of course, with the Russian bots. But what's really gotten them turned on to Andrew Yang is that he talks about this universal basic income helping stave off automation in the future, which I think is a good point to bring up because, you know, you look at the economy right now and how many people drive for a living. And if you get self-driving cars, that's a lot of people that go out of work. Really, any industry is going to have automation within the next 10, 20 years. That's going to cut down on significant amounts of jobs. And that's his big issue on why he wants the UBIs, because automation is really going to take hold of our economy.
And why is it that the alt-right guys want that? Because they're afraid that some Russian bot is going to automate out their hates. They think hate is bot-worthy.
I think it's mostly because they work in that tech industry where, I don't know if they're working like for a Google or a Facebook or anyone, but they have tech kind of jobs, and that's, of course, one of the industries that would be hardest hit by automation.
Well, that is just – it is curious to me if there's a certain sector of the society – that based on the jobs they do, tech or drivers or something, tend to be more predisposed to being right-wing, alt-right, super crazies. Wouldn't that be a curious thing to find out? I mean, it's a little confusing to me why they would be the people who are interested in Andrew Yang. But I'm a big supporter of the UBI. I think it's a great idea, slightly for a different reason than what Andrew Yang is saying, is just because of in response to automation. You know, his plan is basically $1,000 a month per person, not limited based on how much money you earn or anything. Everybody gets the same amount. He obviously he's trying to make a much larger argument for why he's supportive of it because of, you know, some of the changes, trying to, I guess, justify it. I just think it's pretty much what happens in our society anyway. The number of people who actually work and earn or only spend the money that they earn, that they're not getting any subsidies from anywhere else, that they're not picking up any other money, that they're not getting some sort of farm subsidy, or they're not getting something from Social Security, or they're not getting a pension from the government, or they're not living off of their wife's earnings. Like, very few people actually, I think it's less than a fifth, or one, it's about one fifth of the population actually works, earns, and spends. Everybody else is in a, somehow there's some kind of an exchange that involves someone else, some other kind of government, some other kind of promise, some other kind of individual who's caring for you. And it's just a better idea, it seems to me, to simplify the system. And I think Andrew Yang doesn't go far enough on simplifying the system for my taste. To sort of even it out and start to build in an expectation that because of the way our economy has grown over the last 150 years, it just makes the most sense to stop restricting people on the help and aid that they're getting, and to build it into the set of more normalized expectations. Because what we do is we end up hiding a whole lot of money that people receive that could be just put into the basic the basic universal income. And I think it's something that really makes sense, and we really need to rethink our economic flow and the issue of government support. I think that's always been the big question, is how do those relate to each other. And this was a big idea, you know, that was kicked around back in 1972, or early 1970s, and finally done away with 1972 by Richard Nixon. It was at that point an alternative to the federal minimum wage. So rather than making a hourly wage amount to be forced by the federal government on private employers, it was some kind of version of universal basic income. But hey, Brad and Robbinsdale, you've got some thoughts about Andrew Yang. What do you think is going on there?
Well, I guess I would like to speak about the topic of reparations. And a mm-hmm. caller on the Brad broadcast this morning opined that he thought this would be a wedge issue that would ensure Trump's reelection. And again, just sort of sticking to the topic of reparations, I think it would just be impossible to justify and calculate, you know, again, you know, what would be fair payments. That is, between, let's say, Joe Blow, whose ancestors experienced 12 generations of mm-hmm. exploitation and oppression, versus Mary Smith, whose ancestors, you know, experienced, you know, 10 generations of exploitation and oppression. And I think, again, first of all, that, you know, Jonathan Capehart at the Westminster Forum, you know, again, said that, you know, one thing that would be important would just be some type of apology. And Amy Klobuchar actually made a response saying that, you know, we don't need about a money transfer, but just positive policies that would end, you know, the effects of, you know, years of discrimination, and especially, let's say, affirmative action, job programs, urban renewal, criminal justice reform, anti-discrimination laws, etc., etc. And I think, you know, this would be, you know, something that, again, the Democrats have been accused of sort of ignoring, you know, the issues, you know, that are important to African Americans, so and other minority groups. And I think that is one of the things that, you know, might be really important to focus on.
Yeah, well, Brad, I think it's, you know, that's well articulated, and I appreciate it. I am for reparations, but I will tell you, reparations, like, it's like tax policy or the Green New Deal. The details matter a lot. Or we're going to talk a little bit here about open borders, and that matters a lot about what version of reparations someone is talking about, because you've raised a good point. You know, how would the system go about creating a sense that there's fairness, that fairness has been had? And I've seen some versions of reparations and way of talking about it that doesn't demand, that isn't built around someone saying, okay, fair deal. Now everything's back to square. Don't worry about it. It's not like paying a bet, you know, paying off a debt or paying off a wager. That it is, it's not going to rectify how many people, especially enslaved Africans and their families, were damaged for generations by chattel slavery. But it's trying to accommodate something else. Via reparations. So let me ask you this, Brad, if you're still there with us. We just lost Brad. Yeah, I should have told him. I should have told him I was going to ask him this question. And I guess my question for Brad and for others would be this. I am as worried as anyone, and I think we all should be, about anything that would help Donald Trump win re-election, right? So, I mean, I would do about anything and not do about anything if I thought that it was going to influence Donald Trump being elected again. But setting that aside, if it were possible for it not to influence the election in a way that would put Donald Trump back in the White House, would that change people's view of it? So I think it's just worth an explanation or worth an experimentation in your mind, a mind experiment to say, hey, if it didn't, if I wasn't calculating in the effect on it angering some people, is there something right about it? Is there something good about it? Is there something that would be beneficial about it? And Andrew Yang is, he's known for a couple of things, UBI and this reparations. And I appreciate Brad's call about that. So, hey, Phil in Golden Valley, if you can hold on over the break, I'd love to give you enough time to, we're going to run into a break here. So if you can hold on or give a call back just before we start back up in the next segment, I'd love to hear your thoughts on universal basic income and all. So if that's possible for you to stay. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about driver's license, the new driver's license in Minnesota, and also open borders and this whole business about IDing and who should vote and all the rest of it, because I think those two issues are actually tied together in some really important ways. So this is Doug Padgett in with Brett, and it's your afternoon repartee on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be back after the break.
Hello, this is Andrew Yang, Democratic candidate for president, and you're listening to Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hi, this is Laura, and I want to tell you about my family's favorite thing. It's our wood stove. We bought it about 14 years ago from Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. And see, the wood stove has actually paid for itself because we can keep the main area that we live in toasty warm with this great moist heat. But more important than saving money, it has actually improved our lives. Having a fire simplifies life. It provides comfort. It sort of takes the chill out of winter.
I'm Peter Solak. In 1977, I started Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, and I experienced the simple joy of warming myself by a fire. I also realized that the place and the way we embrace fire has evolved in a diversity of forms and styles. So at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, we have brought together the widest selection of our fireplace products and technical knowledge in the Twin Cities. Our mission is to use our knowledge to help you choose the design and function that is right for you and your home.
Visit Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces today and find the right fire for you.
Victor's 1959 Cafe in South Minneapolis is a locally owned and operated restaurant offering traditional Cuban food. Open for breakfast and lunch daily with dinner Tuesday through Saturday. For night shift workers, Victor's even has both a morning and evening happy hour, and Victor's now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try some delicious, authentic Cuban cuisine like ropa vieja and seafood paella. Make your reservation and learn more at victors1959cafe.com. Victor's 1959 Cafe, revolutionary Cuban cooking.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is all digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
April showers bring May flowers, but make sure no flowers are growing out of your carpet this spring. You know that bacteria and allergens build up in your carpeting, crushing hopes and dreams of healthy indoor air. Only my friends at Zero Res clean with healthy, clean-powered water. Call Zero Res right now, 952-ZERO-RES, or go online at ZeroResMinnesota.com and tell them you want the AM950 special. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward. It spells the same.
This is Brad from Robbinsdale, your old buddy, and I'm an avid listener of the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950 radio with Doug, Brett, Eric, and Hunter. And sorry to disappoint, I am not running for president.
It's good to know somebody's not running for president. Hey, I don't know if you know this, Brett, but I signed up to run for president like a year and a half ago. I'd forgotten about it, actually, because what I got back was something that said, hey, you basically can't sign up to run for president in a year when there's not a presidential election. That's with the official federal government place where they keep track of people running for office. But Politico looked for all the people who had pre-registered for running for Congress. So this little Politico thing, like, here's the people running for president all over the country. State of Minnesota says that I'm running for president. I'm not. I'm no longer running for president. But I got a text message from a friend the other day. Because I had this little movement going on back in, you know, it was right after 2016. Like a lot of people, I was freaking out in 2017 about what to do. So I thought, you know, the best thing we can do is to ask everyone to consider running for president. The thing we need to do with Donald Trump is not just have, 65, 70, 80 million people vote against him. We should have 65 million people run against him. Right. Like, I love the idea of, like, Donald Trump has 70 million people who want to oppose him as president, like them personally, that they want to run against him. So I was doing this little thing called, everyone should run. So I technically registered in 2017, but it doesn't actually mean anything because they sent me back a form that said, hey, this doesn't mean anything because there's no election this year. But anyway, so I, for one brief point, and in the minds of some friends who stumbled upon this thing on Politico, I too was running for president. But the question is that Andrew Yang and some other people are actually running for president. So I know Phil has some thoughts about that. Hey, Phil, what are your thoughts on the universal basic income, one of the ideas promoted by Andrew Yang?
Well, my thoughts on the universal basic income is that it's an idea that's been around for a while. I can remember when ideas like this were rolling around many, many, many decades ago, mm-hmm. when I was marching against the war in Vietnam, and we were marching also for the consideration that was happening in Europe at the time, 40 hours pay for 30 hours work.
And that was a way that in Europe,
in other words, they were
making it happen.
There would be more jobs available. You'd pay people to work 4 7.5-hour days a week, and you'd have
more available
slots for people to work more hours.
Yeah. So
the other thing about the UBI from Andrew Yang, the reason why he has appeals to the alt-right.
Yeah.
They're mostly not really high earners.
Mostly
lower earners because they really don't get along with very many other people very well. They're kind of cranky. They don't get really big paying jobs, and so the jobs they get, so they'd be really happy if they got their supplement because, you know, they work, maybe they all work two or three not very good paying jobs. Here is another idea for somebody to grab a hold to.
Yeah, Phil.
How about 20 bucks an hour in 2020?
Yeah, 20 for 2020. Yeah.
20 for 2020. You got to remember, this $15 an hour concept came up, how many years ago now?
Phil, I appreciate that comment a lot on the minimum wage. $15 is not enough.
Many economists were saying that if the minimum wage would have been indexed to inflation 40 years ago, the minimum wage 3 years ago would have been close to $20 an hour.
Right, right. Yeah, if you'd kept track.
So why don't we make the minimum wage $20 an hour? And it goes nice with 20 and 20, 20.
It's got a ring to it.
Yeah,
it's got
a ring to it.
You're like
the
999.
It's like a bumper sticker to me.
Yeah, well, thanks, Phil. I appreciate your listening and your comments. That does get after it in some ways, right? This is something they've been doing in Europe where they would where people were required to be paid full-time work even though they weren't working 40 hours, so they could increase, take 10 hours of work out, and then for every four of those employees, you add 40 more hours. And that's a way to get people working. I'm sort of fine with that. I actually think that in our system, though, if you put a package together that had Medicaid for All or some version of this, right, where the taxes that you pay and that we all pay and how we build into our society is that your basic health care coverage is covered. And then there's some basic universalized income that comes out of the profits that especially are extracted out of corporations, which I like a lot because most corporations find a way to hide their taxes. So you just make a base corporate tax, especially for corporations earning a certain amount of money. This is what I've heard Andrew Yang identify as. You get your top earning companies in this country, and they make it possible for the UBI cost to be covered. Then what you have now is you have people who have enough money coming in that if they're part of a family system or they're part of another group of people, they can get close to living on it. Their health care then is also paid by their taxes. Now it frees people up to do the kind of work that people want to do and that our society needs. And that's the big turnaround. This is why I think it's so much better than just increasing the minimum wage, because too often, and I do think we should increase the minimum wage, but I think we should increase the minimum wage and do universal care and do a universalized basic income, because it matches it. It gets the other 70% of the people in this country into the kind of flow that's currently happening for the 30%. So what I believe it would do and how I think it would function is that it would cause the workflow in the country to really be organized differently. And that's what we really need. We can't let innovations just keep creeping only by some kind of economic pressures and business models. The collective of us, the government, the all of us, we need a big shift in how our economy is currently structured so that we can see some real different outcomes going forward, because our country's getting too small. Now, this is something I want to talk about after the break, so I'm going to get to Gary and to Mark in a minute. But our country's population is decreasing and getting too old, so this is something we're going to need anyway to answer a whole lot of other issues, because in the previous 50 years are going to look really different from the coming 50 years on the economic prowess and power of the American economy. All right, so hey, Gary, if you got something real quick, I'd love to hear your thoughts on private companies and their takeover of the United States.
The big money bosses, these buttons of privilege, they complain about paying taxes, and it was 90% when they were millionaires then, and they had plenty of money they kept before that kicked in, and they lived big. And anyway, the other thing they complain about is paying more than starvation wages. And they complain about the waste of the government. How about the waste of paying their billions of dollars they make off us by sitting and drawing their dividends, and they don't pay it back to the government? They owe something back with all that privilege they have. And how about privatizing our health care, privatizing our roads, privatizing our prisons, and privatizing our military? You heard of all the corruption with Halliburton and all the corruption with our health care?
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Gary. Yeah, I mean, this is the question I think that Gary's raising, is the power of these independent companies, privately owned companies and publicly traded companies, the amount of power that they have in our society. I don't think it serves us all very well. And the people who also know this, by the way, are people that work in private capital, in capitalization, in a capitalist system. The funders, the bankers, they all recognize this is not set for the future. The way it's currently set up, the way the system currently works, is not going to get us to the future. It is not going to get us in the future in the way that we hope that it will. So some big changes are going to be coming. They're either going to come by catastrophe or they're going to come by design, one way or the other. And we can talk a little bit more about that, because I want to talk about this open borders thing. I had a great conversation online about this the other day. I'd love to take it here to the radio. So AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Be with us here after the break. Our phone number, if you want to call after the break, 952-946-6205. This is your afternoon repartee at AM 950.
Hello, humans. This is Ellie Krug from Ellie 2.0 Radio, and you are listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950.
Tom Hartman here telling you that solar energy isn't just for environmentalists. Switching to all-energy solar is actually perfect for reducing your carbon footprint while also saving money on your monthly electric bill. The fact that solar panels cause no earth-harming emissions while it's producing energy is a bonus. Who in the world could object to that? But they can also help you save money month after month for decades. And they do it with a clean footprint. So go green and start saving money today by visiting allenergysolar.com.
April showers bring May flowers. But who knows what else April weather will bring? Fortunately, Standard Heating and Air Conditioning has you covered. Standard's triple savings sale saves you up to $2,300 when you install a new furnace and AC before April 30th. So find out more about Standard's triple savings sale and how you can save up to $2,300 today at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
Tap, taste, and treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
Art lovers, it's time to celebrate, learn about, and collect local art at the St. Paul Art Crawl, running April 26th to 28th. The Spring St. Paul Art Crawl, presented by the St. Paul Art Collective, is a must-do experience that you will love. Over the weekend, you will have the chance to explore a wide variety of art while touring through local artists' studios, lofts, and galleries. Up for purchase will be paintings, photography, pottery, sculpture, fiber arts, and more. The Art Crawl sprawls over 34 locations. Join the Art Crawl and discover outstanding art for your own. And when you buy local art, you're providing to artists so that they may continue to create the art we love. The Metro Transit is supporting the local art community, too, with free transit passes. Download your pass to ride buses and light rail for free during the Art Crawl. Be sure to get details at stpaulartcrawl.org. That's stpaulartcrawl.org.
Hey, this is Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Join me and Desi Doyen weeknights on AM 950 at 7 p.m. for the Bradcast. 1 hour of interviews, analysis, news, and snark that you need but won't get from the corporate media. Join me for the Bradcast, Monday through Friday at 7 p.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 32. Wednesday, about 3 to 5 inches of snow with a high near 41. Thursday, about 3 to 7 inches of snow with a high near 36. And Friday, cloudy with a high around 37.
Don't miss the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday at the Veterans Memorial Community Center in Invergrove Heights. See up to 150 home improvement experts. The Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday only. It's the smart place to start your home improvement projects. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
Hi, Minnesota. It's Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hey, welcome back. A couple of things to talk about. Brett, I don't know if you know, I'm in Washington, D.C. today, and I was here yesterday. And do you know what I missed? I didn't even know it was happening over there at the Capitol. The Minnesotans got together and had their hot dish competition. Did you know anything about that?
I've heard
how
about that.
How could I have missed?
I've heard they've done that before. I don't know the exact details. Do they do like a competition amongst themselves, or how does that work?
They do. They do. Started in 2011 by Al Franken. Al Franken then, and now headed by Tina Smith, you know, since she's sort of in his seat, she has taken this on, and all of the elected officials, federal elected officials, put a hot dish into the competition, and then they vote on it. And McCollum won, and I guess Dean Phillips came in second. Ilhan Omar, she said, was a little too hot for the crowd, so she needs to tone it down. But man, if I had known, I would have been over there. I would have done some live repartee coverage from the hot dish fiesta yesterday afternoon, and somehow I missed it. It would have been the perfect moment to catch a little hot dish and get a dish out a little hot story about the hot dish. All right. Hey, I want to get to Julie here in Minneapolis about the UBI before we talk a little bit about immigration and about the Israeli election that apparently both people have won. But Julie, what are your thoughts on UBI?
Hi, I'm on a cell phone. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound pretty good.
Okay. I have to plead ignorance on the basic minimum income because I haven't studied it at all. But my gut reaction is this. So everybody gets $1,000. What does that do to end wealth and poverty inequality? I mean, if everybody gets ratcheted up $1,000, we haven't changed the dynamic.
Yeah, good point. There's sort of two worries on that are common, and I think you've named one of them. One of them is, doesn't that just sort of just move everything up $1,000, right? That's one. The other is, what does it do to inflation? Well, so here's the thing, is that depending on how much money you are currently bringing in, $1,000 a month is either not very much. So if you're super wealthy or medium wealthy or kind of wealthy, it's a little bit. I mean, it's significant. But if you're not wealthy, or if you're struggling, or if you're new to the income, new to earning, it creates a really stable base. So the theory is, it's really helpful for it's disproportionately helpful to the more poor people, and that creates a leveling effect, even because it's not as much to affect the higher earners.
I get that argument, but it's a spit in the bucket. It's a twist in the air. Wind. Somebody who has a salary today of a quarter of $1 million doesn't need an extra $1,000.
You. That's a good point. UBI is universal basic income is not designed to make the wealthy people less wealthy. It's designed to raise the minimum, the basic, the bottom. It's designed to raise that higher. It's not redistributive in that sense that it wants to take power away from the more wealthy. One big push that people have, and I think you're raising, is why would you spend money on the super wealthy? The benefit of, as it turns out, when you run the numbers and do the math, there's not that many super wealthy people. So the actual math doesn't put all that much money in the pockets of the super wealthy, even though it feels a little bit unfair. That's how a lot of people feel about Social Security, right? They can't believe that millionaires still get their Social Security payments because we don't limit Social Security payments based on the amount of wealth that someone has. So if you think about it in those terms, it's kind of like distributing Social Security across the entire system instead of only to the retirees.
Okay, so let's just spend 10 seconds on Social Security. Mm-hmm. If the cap on wages were raised for Social Security income contribution, we could solve the Social Security question for about 50,000 years.
Yeah, forever. Yeah. Yeah. What you're saying is, if I think it's like $172,000 a year or something like that, money you earn. Maybe that's the number.
It cuts off at 120.
Yeah, the money you earn over that amount is no longer subject to Social Security, because basically they're saying, well, Social Security is kind of like your money. And if you made Social Security tax apply to all earnings, that would solve Social Security. And this is the argument about UBI, and this is really boring and complicated for some people. But if you were to put a tax on the amount of earnings in a business where they first had to pay their tax before they could return dividends to their shareholders, then you would be able to pay for UBI. So that's how it would be paid for. And the thing that's good about it, and I hope people will do this, there's a lot of questions, right? There's a lot of questions about if UBI is financially feasible, if it's ethically right, if it fits economic theory. And what I hope we will do, and the reason I hope we do this is, first of all, we need to, but I think we just need to have the conversation. We need to re-engage people in thinking about how economies work, how pay works,
yeah,
and how the federal government,
yeah,
works. And UBI,
definitely,
and universal health care and open borders does that. It pushes people,
yeah,
to just – because none of us – I mean, look, here's the thing. You can follow economists. Nobody really knows how this economy works anyway or why it works, right? It's all theories and guesses to the degree that it actually does work. No theory explains it all. So no proposal should be put under the weight of having to answer to every theory's critique. Because sometimes these things just work because they work. And I know that sounds a little crazy, but that's how it goes. Hey, Mark, you've got a comment about the election in Israel. And I was just looking at the news feed on that. And apparently, both Benny Gantz and Benjamin Netanyahu have claimed victory in the Israeli election. They both stepped out and said the results are in, the numbers are clear. Gantz saying that the blue and white has won, and Netanyahu saying that that the Likud won a clear victory. So, what are your thoughts,
right,
on that?
The Gantz party is the blue and white party, and they're apparently taking over control of the Knesset. And this is extremely important to us because of the relationship between Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the concerns that people should have, you know, if they're paying attention, is to the support that, you know, we've got Russiagate. Well, you know, where is the quid pro quo? Who has really benefited, you know, a foreign power that has benefited from the Trump administration since its inception?
Yeah.
And you'd have to say, of course, it's been Israel, overwhelmingly. We, you know, and the things that we have done for Benjamin Netanyahu, and I'm saying this because yesterday Benjamin Netanyahu sent out a tweet bragging about how it was his idea to convince Trump to designate Iran Red Brigade as a terrorist organization.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that we've done, get rid of the Iran nuclear deal, you know, cut aid to Gaza, make Jerusalem the embassy of the United States and Israel, annex Palestine by tweet, and then, mm-hmm, you know, this declaration of war against,
yeah,
Iran, that doesn't benefit anybody and is contrary to what the United Nations and the rest of our allies want. And, you know, picture this. Yesterday, there was unleashed on a five-story building a poster of Benjamin Netanyahu shaking hands with Donald Trump. And,
gross,
you know, that's huge. And the implications are, you know, designating these as, you know,
yeah, that should be considered graffiti. That,
right,
kind of,
and I just want to give a shout-out, if I could, quickly to the previous discussion, because progressive Democrats, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, are doing something huge today in pushing back against Democratic establishment funding of the $733 billion Pentagon spending bill.
Good,
so,
for them.
Progressives, yep, especially, like, you know, it mentioned Ilhan Omar, Alexander Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, but primarily Pramila Jayapal of Washington and Mark Pocan, mm-hmm, of a Democrat congressman from Wisconsin. And probably the most cogent thing that anybody has said in the past couple of days is Representative Ro Khanna, a Democrat from California, who said, you can't oppose endless wars and then vote to fund them.
And that's a great line.
The Progressive, yep, Caucus is doing is pushing back against Nancy Pelosi, who wants to get rid of national health care, pushing back against the corporate establishment Democrats and say, if you're going to raise all this money for war, you need to raise more for domestic spending and take care of the American people.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Mark. Appreciate the comments. Thanks for the call. I'm going to get to David here about the UBI just before we go into the break. Hey, David.
Hey, I
just want to say that, you know, when I first heard about universal basic income, I was I was dead set against it, but little by little, I've been coming around. And the thing that got me was there was an argument, a debate online that I saw, and I won't give out the names because they're very conservative people.
they're probably not listening. It might be safe if you want to sneak them in.
Right, but a conservative who's labeled alt-right from Canada said that one of the reasons that he was in favor of the healthcare system there was because it took away the risk for people to start their own businesses. They didn't. Yep. So this universal basic income could do the same in a similar fashion. It takes away some of the risk that people can go out and go, I've got an idea, and I won't starve if
yes,
I do.
Yep.
I won't end up being homeless. I can try this, and I can pursue this idea and try to become a business person, my own boss, and, you know, to be an entrepreneur. And there's really nothing wrong with that. So, you know, little by little, I've been coming around to this universal basic income.
I think you're right on that, David. I think this is where conservatives are going to come around too, because it's basically it makes in small part something similar available to all people that's available to wealthy people or those who have access to wealth. People who start new projects or start new businesses or launch a company, they live for significant periods of time before they're making any money by living off of the investment of some investor or a family member or a bank that is putting money behind them so that they can have the base of their life covered so that they can build their business. That's sort of how it goes, right? For years, decade or longer, Amazon was famous for having made no profits, right? Now it's the most valuable company in the world because that's how it goes. And once you start to say, if you can make it safe for people to step out, have enough income that they can live. Look, $1,000 a month is not enough to live a full life. It's not supposed to be. It's supposed to put a floor instead of having a safety net. It's supposed to say that you can only go so low on your income. Now, some people, you know, they certainly have the ability to still become poor even with $1,000 a month because they can run up a bunch of debt. They can do all kinds of things. It's not a panoply of solution, but it does get people somewhere. And I think that conservatives could come around on that idea. And of all the things, this UBI in the next 5 and 10 years could be the thing that seems the most reasonable to people from both sides of a political spectrum, which I find just totally, totally intriguing. And by the way, I'd say exactly the same thing on universal and some version of universal income or healthcare or Medicare for all, something where you are for sure covered even without income, that it takes care of your health insurance. That would free up so many people to leave jobs they're in right now that they don't want to be in and to reach out and to start something new. It would be an innovation hub, as Tim Pawlenty used to be fond of.
You know, another thing on universal healthcare is we expect American companies to compete on a global market, but they have to foot a bill foreign countries don't have to, as far as healthcare goes, because they've got the government taking care of that. So all these companies in America have to spend money that they shouldn't have to spend in order to provide healthcare for their employees. If we took that off their backs, that would help.
Right, the government
them
should make a. The government needs to make a level playing field for all those companies. Hey, David, thanks so much. Exactly. Appreciate your listening. Thanks for being with us. Hey, we'll be back here the afternoon Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hi, this is Laura with Food Freedom Radio, and you are listening to the 4 o'clock Repartee, which kind of like means conversation between people or something. Repartee, repertoire, something like that.
I'm Nick Slavik, proprietor of the Nick Slavik Painting and Restoration Company. I speak nationally and internationally on the subjects of entrepreneurship, trades reform, apprenticeship, craftsmanship, and coding science. I've created a rigorous apprenticeship program where I find, train, inspire, and mentor young people in my craft. The result is an ultra-professional crew of craftspeople that cares about their work and your project. We're not like other contractors. Visit NICKSLAVIK.com. That's NickSlavik.com to learn more.
Being a dog is awesome, except when you really gotta go, but you're stuck inside. That's why I had my human call the Urban Dog. Daily walks, field trips, play groups, one-on-one time, safe off-leash play, and pet sitting. I love being an Urban Dog.
The Urban Dog works with your schedule and can create a plan that fits your needs.
The Urban Dog. Exercise, explore, socialize. Let the journey begin. Call 651-231-6333. That's 651-231-6333.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. We have families waiting for a car. You know, over 85% of unemployed are successful in finding and keeping a job if they have dependable transportation. A car plus a job equals a life changed. 612-919-5526. We have families waiting for a car. 919-5526 or autotech.org.
This is Ellie Krug from Ellie 2.0 Radio on Mondays from 7 to 8 a.m. Many listeners know that I founded Human Inspiration Works, LLC, which trains on human inclusivity and on how to be welcoming, diverse humans. Today, organizations of all sizes find that they need to train team members on diversity and inclusion. I can do that. Many say that my trainings change the way they see the world. I'd love to help make your organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
Oh no, you shattered your cell phone. Now what? Listen closely. We know you're lost without your phone. Bring it to Computer Revolution today. We'll fix it and have you back online before someone asks, "Where are you?" Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair has over 18 years experience fixing computer devices, all brands, all carriers. Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair, located in Roseville at Highway 36 and Fairview Avenue, or call 651-633-6600. We fix phones, same day, 7 days a week.
Hi, this is Matt McNeil, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repeat Stop to the Do, right here on AM 950.
Hey, welcome back, AM 950. Hey, I want to say a couple things about open borders. As long as we're really on this, you know, this left leaning sort of day. And by the way, I'm not one who puts myself in the category of calling for America to become a new kind of socialism. I actually think we should become a new kind of capitalism that's impacted by four R's. I think we should be more redistributive of our capitalism, more regulative, more responsive, and more righteous or fair. So I think there's a way to keep the capitalist system as we have it, as we have it ideally structured, and to make it more redistributive, regulated, responsive, and righteous or fair. And one of those is to deal with the borders. I'm an advocate for open borders. And what I mean by that is that we start with the borders being open and then only close them off to people for whom they need to be closed off, as opposed to starting with closed borders and only giving the exception to certain people who claim asylum or are granted some kind of a specific visa, right? So this shift from the presumption is that it's open to away from the presumption is that it is closed is a better way to go. Part of the reason that we can't get our heads around immigration is because for 150 years in this country, we've been acting as if we have a scarcity problem of space and economy in the United States. So people will say, and someone had this great pushback on Facebook the other day when I was pushing for open, for the beginning of, you know, for the standard being openness to the borders. Let everybody come. Let them come. And if the there's this belief that, you know, well, there'll be 100,000 people that'll keep pouring in every single day. The truth of it is there will not be people trying to get in every single day. The United States is an extremely expensive place to live. It's a difficult place to live. And it's only accommodating to certain people who can make it work here. So it's not like this is the greatest place in the world to always live and live all the time. Europe has all this movement between European nations. And when there are human crises, when there is some kind of a huge refugee crisis, then we have problems. In the United States, we wouldn't be having problems if we assumed that what we want are more people coming in this country. We have a declining population in the United States, and it's only going to decline more over the next decades. If the 1 million people that are considered new immigrants in this country every year, about 600,000 of those are people that already live here, and what actually makes them new immigrants is that their status changes. If we were to have 100,000 200,000, 500,000 people a year coming into the United States and staying long-term and being long-term residents and long-term citizens of this country and going through citizenship. It would revolutionize our economy. It would revolutionize our resources. It would revolutionize our small towns. Look, even our big cities in this country are starting to suffer from not enough people moving into them. This is a big country. There's plenty of room. When you actually do the numbers, the reason that we've always made the argument that we don't want to have borders that begin with the presumption of open is because what we're trying to do is some kind of curation of the American experience. The argument has not been about that we don't have the resources, that we don't have the room. There are small towns in this country that would love to have 100,000 people in them. We could see whole communities develop. The idea that there's not enough resources and there's not enough space in this country, or as the president of the United States said the other day, we're full, is just wrong on the facts. And it's all about trying to curate a particular American experience where, for some reason, rather than having the forces of the market, and this is why I don't understand why conservatives don't support open borders, they should be saying, hey, get out of the way of our labor force. Get out of the way of the development of the economy. Just make a clear playing field and let everybody have at it. I think there's plenty of room in this country for immigrants and for immigration to happen. In fact, I think the country needs it. I think the country's going to be demanding it in years to come. There's not enough workers. There's not enough flow. And if we're ever going to compete on a global market, we're going to need more people in this country. So that's my take. Hey, Sue in Minneapolis, what are your thoughts on this idea of open borders?
Hi, I'm going to bump it back just to what you were previously talking about. I hope this is okay. And then
of course,
just
of course
go right back.
Okay.
But
No, it's okay.
I wanted to say that rather than using the word socialism or socialist and everybody using that to freak out, why don't we just call capitalism community capitalism? It just sounds kind of nice, has a nice ring to it, and it just is more about having capitalism regulated, like you said. But community capitalism, I think we could go far with that term. So, and
I like
I'll just turn
phrase.
It back to you, Doug. Thank you.
No, I like that phrase. You're going to take us into the break. Community capitalism, I like that. I've been playing with the term we all-ism. As in the Declaration of Independence, we the people, I think that all people, this we all-ism. I mean, one of the struggles with socialism and capitalism categories and all this kind of stuff, one of the struggles with it is that it's talking about an economic and organizing theory. It's not talking about a social theory. And people try to use capitalism or socialism or communism to describe a social theory, but what it's really designed to do is to describe an economic theory and a corporate organizing theory. So it doesn't really get at what most of us are talking about. And I think this idea that Sue had of community capitalism is then trying to talk about the way we think about one another. And that's why I like we all-ism as our organizing social principle in this country. But all of these points, whether it's reparations or health insurance, coverage for all people, or universalized basic income, or open borders. These are all the kinds of things that are important to talk about. And we've actually been talking about them for decades in the United States. And I hope in Minnesota, and especially on AM 950, we continue to talk about those. So we'll be back tomorrow, AM 950, with your repartee from 4 until 5. And the snow is coming, so get ready.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. This is the end of our program, or the Departee. You can listen to our show anytime at AM950radio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.